real, true, honest inspiration today. Loads of amazing speakers. One guy that stood out particularly for me, Joel Buckowitz, the knife maker. If you Google Joel Buckowitz, the knife maker, you will probably come across an amazing video. It's on Vimeo if you have a search. Just a beautiful little film about how Joel has put his heart and soul into creating objects that I particularly connect with as well, because I have a feeling that if you gave me a knife and sent me to the woods, I could build, I could construct, I could survive, I could hunt, I could live. And after I stop living, that knife will still be on the ground for the next person to pick up, and maybe generations more. Joel, you create things that in some ways have a certain immortality, and they're very beautiful, but people have weird feelings about them.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, my sense with knives is that, because I have time to think about this stuff as I'm at, you know, my grinder at my task. So I tend to think of knives as sort of tools of entropy, but also of creation. So they sort of tear things apart. But the knives that I make, kitchen knives especially, are used as tools to make such beautiful food. For me to be able to be associated with people out there that are making some of like the greatest food, and food that is art and really high craft, that's really special, yeah, for me.
You touched upon how hard it is, how rewarding it is, how there's a tightrope, you know, in every grind, and compensating, overcompensating. There was a lot of Zen in what you do. There was a lot of philosophy. Tell me, what did you want to say that you maybe didn't have time for today?
Right. Well, there were a couple things I wanted to get to, and one was this idea of sustainability for small shops. There was an article in New York Magazine, I guess a couple weeks ago, that sort of was titled "The Twee Generation." So it was kind of a nasty article about the maker movement in Brooklyn, and it sort of espoused this idea that it's all just kind of doomed. It's just sort of like window dressing, in that none of us will get past 5 years. And if we do, we'll outsource to the point where, you know, all we'll do is just have Brooklyn on our name. And my idea was that, you know, I've done some reaching out and tried to do some, you know, outsourcing. I looked at all the sort of likely facilities in the States that could grind knives for me, with the idea that if I were to be able to get some knives cut out and ground, made out of the same great materials that that my handmade knives are made out of, I could have a second line of knives that would be cheaper. Because, you know, it kind of, to an extent, burns my ass a little bit that the only people that use my knives are people that can afford $600 for a knife, right? I want to get the knives in the hands of the people actually doing the fantastic work at these, like, beautiful restaurants. So I reached out and I tried to make this happen, and I pushed prototypes through like 7 different facilities in the States. I wanted to try and keep things stateside. So, and everything came back and it was all just shit. So what I came to realize was that that in the U.S. at least, manufacturing is set up beautifully to do, say, to make like 1,000 or 10,000 of any given thing in a week in a sort of mediocre way, right? But if you ask them to slow down and make, say, 50 perfect things a week, they can't do it. They've lost the knowledge to do this kind of work. One facility I pushed up through was a place up in the Northeast where they make knives, and they've been open for like 150 years. And this is a place where they used to make these enormous drop forges, these like 40-ton drop forges that would, you know, come down and smash a hot piece of metal, hit it twice, and all of a sudden it's a bolstered knife, right? So they used to make these forges that they would then sell to other knife-making companies in the area. These days, they have one left, and it's sitting in a room unused because they don't even know how to fucking use the thing, right? So there's this giant drain of knowledge. So what I had to do was reassess and come back and say, we're gonna sort of re-engineer a fixturing system here in the shop that with which we can get into this space between making five of any given thing and 1,000, so that maybe we make 50 a week. And we're going to sort of engineer our own equipment, basically, because it's been lost to a certain extent. So I think what I wanted to say was that I think that space between 5 and 50 is where sustainability lies for small shops like mine. And then I had some other inspirational shit to say too, but I don't know how to get to it. So.
Maintains a certain credibility to the product when it, you know, this non-transferable kind of, well, transferable in a way, but non, you can't get much more time. And to do things how you want to do it, it's got to take this amount of time to do it. Is there a particular piece? I know that you say you want to make every knife has to be the best knife you've ever made.
Yeah.
Is there any particular piece that has an emotional connection?
One particular knife? You know, not really. They kind of go out of my hand. It's another little bit of a Zen thing. It makes me think a little bit of those, or like those sort of Buddhist sand drawings where they take, you know, a year to make this big, like, mandala thing, and then they sweep it away in like 30 seconds. So for what happens is I make these things and pretty much they're all sold as soon as I finish them that day, or maybe even out the door. So I don't really get a chance to play with them or have much time with them. So for me, the joy that I get from them is in that moment when you are just finishing the knife, you take the tape off, and all of a sudden, before it was like big blob of like painter's tape and a handle that was finished. And you take the tape off, and there's the blade all completely finished. And then, oh, that's a knife, you know. Mm. That's a great moment. And so I have to enjoy that. And then I put together the little saya, the sheath, and these things, and sort of package it up, and off it goes. But no, I think it really is. It's kind of the last knife that I made that's special to me, and where I'm kind of moving with it. I don't have. My work is really always getting better. I mean, I've been doing it for about 8 years now, but it's constantly evolving. The knife that, say, is like, I make a couple types of like 9-inch kitchen knives, like 240-millimeter kitchen knives. And if you were to take the knives from a year ago and set them next to the knives as they are now, they're, at least in my eyes, completely different. Maybe you would think it would seem like they were kind of the same, but they're very different knives. So, the one I just made is the one I'm usually most proud of.
So what do you reach for when you've got to cut some packing tape or you're opening a letter? Not that I ever use it. I use my finger for letters, to be honest. What, do you have something that you carry?
Yeah, I have a knife that I carry around.
Reaching into your
bag.
So this must have been stowed away on the plane rather than in your hand luggage.
Yeah, you know what? It's back in my dome there.
Can you explain it?
Well, usually what I carry is an Oppenau. You know, I feel
I've got to work in Oppenau mostly for food, actually. Baguettes, cheese, and.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's a safe knife to carry in New York because the laws are such that any knife that you can open with one hand is illegal, and you'll have taken away, and maybe you'll be brought down to the station. So you can't. It's got that wonderful collar on it that locks it in your pocket, and I just feel like that's one of the best, you know, across the board furniture, whatever. That's like one of the. Best designs of the 20th century.
Still use a lighting steel with it because of the composite.
Steel. Yeah, and it's that thin, beautiful carbon steel blade that you can keep crazy.
If you ever make your own version of an Oppenau, because there might be something you think, wouldn't it be nice if we just had this? It is perfect in its simplicity.
So perfect.
I know. Yeah. Please put me down for it.
All right, maybe I'll start. I know there's a sort of subculture of people who customize them, put their own handles on and different stuff, so maybe I'll mess around with that a little bit.
Yeah, because the blade is pretty good.
It's like, it's perfect. The blade and that collar, it's like four fucking parts to the thing, and it's just, yeah. It's
how much they cost, and how are they made?
Like $7, yeah. And they're made in, you know, ground quickly in a factory, but, yeah, I don't know how.
Put your edge, your mark on the handle, right. Job done.
I should reach out
okay,
to
them. Okay, I'll come to Brooklyn. I'll bring one in my luggage under the, you can buy them in Brooklyn, I'll bring it to you.
Right.
Let's have a play.
Deal.
Thank you so much for your inspiration. Where can people go to find you on Twitter and online?
I'm just at Cut Brooklyn on Twitter, and I've got a Tumblr page too. Twitter's a good way to find me, and then my website is just cutbrooklyn.com. So, but Twitter's really good. Yeah.
Thanks. Let's go and get coffee or tea or whatever. We need to lubricate ourselves. Yeah.
Well, yeah. The bar. We can make it open.
We have knives.
That's right.